Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of November 15, 2023. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda, currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. And for the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Farish,
here.
Commissioner Fuzeschi,
here.
Commissioner Goldsby,
here.
Commissioner Ganschwer, excuse me. Commissioner Hankins,
here.
Commissioner Streeter,
here.
And myself, Owen Egan, present. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the corrected minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 11th, 2023.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the corrected minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 11th, 2023.
Chair Hankins, second.
The motion has been made and seconded. Is there discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, we'll take a roll call for those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Ganschwer?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of October 25th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 25th, 2023.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll. Those in favor? Mr. Parrish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Ganschel?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2022-0550, Ian Cook versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. Are you there, Mr. Cook?
I'm here.
And is there anyone here from the State of Connecticut? Who's that?
I'm Colin Milne.
I'm sorry, Attorney Colin.
Attorney Colin Milne.
Milne? M-I-L-N?
M-I-L-N-E.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0224, Albert Fra versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Is Mr. Fra here on that matter?
Mr. He's not participating.
Or he's not participating? Counsel?
I would just urge adoption of the hearing officer's report. I don't need to be heard.
Okay, thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter. This was a dismissal, seeing that the complainant did not want to participate. There's no objection to the respondent. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Ganschwer?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes, passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2021-0221, Kevin Grusiden versus Treasurer, Bayview Improvement Association, et al. This was withdrawn. Is there anyone here on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, this was a withdrawal and dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing
officer's report. Yes, sir.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Ganschwer?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2022-0466, Brenda White versus Greg Amy, Chairman, Westfield Fire Commission, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Spell your last name, please. J-I-R. Is there anyone here for Brenda White? Would you like to be heard? Thank you, counsel. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Ferrish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Dansby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Next is FIC 2022-0551, Robert Cushman versus Chief Police Department, City of New Britain, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Yuri Korski, one of the respondents.
Spell your last name, please.
Korski.
Thank you. Do you wish to be heard, Attorney Korski?
Yes, please.
Is there anyone else here on that matter? Is Robert Cushman here on that matter? Thank you. Mark that ready, counsel.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2022-0555, Cindy Zerblis versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Motor Vehicles, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Michelle Gibbons, Department of Motor Vehicles.
Would you like to be heard on that matter?
Just for a few minutes. Thank you, Attorney.
Okay. Is Cindy Zerblis here, please? Right, we'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0568, Katie Cameron versus Chief Court Administrator, Court Operations Division, State of Connecticut Judicial Branch, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Attorney O'Connor. Is Katie Cameron here? We'll mark that ready.
Do you wish to be heard on?
I don't need to be heard. I would only be speaking on behalf of hearing officers.
Thank you. I have some discussion on this matter. Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0572, Joseph Cafora, care of Attorney Michael Muzzi versus Executive Director, Tweed, New Haven Airport Authority.
Robert DiCrescenzo for the respondent.
Spell your last name.
D-E capital C-R-E-S-C-E-N-Z-O.
I
don't need to be heard. I heard enough.
Are you an attorney, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Is there anyone else here on this matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was a dismissal, seeing no objection of the respondent, I move adoption of the arrest warrant.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll call a roll call. Excuse me, on the phone. Can they hear us? On the phone. Can you hear me, sir?
Mr. Cook.
Yes.
Mr. Cook, who can hear everything you're saying, and I know you're using vulgarity. You really are being tape recorded here. Please refrain from speaking. Thank you. So I'll take a roll call of those in favor of this dismissal on FIC 2022-0572. Commissioner Ferrish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Dinshaw?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0016, Frank Hauser versus Chief Police Department, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? That was a withdrawal. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Streeter, as you mentioned, withdrawal and dismissal. I move adoption of the arrest report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Ferrish?
Yes.
Mr. Fisashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goolsbee?
Yes.
Mr. Ganschwin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Last is docket number FIC 2023-0021, Richard Kaczynski This is Chairman State of Connecticut, excuse me, Chairman Connecticut State Board of Mediation and Arbitration et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, this is Bonzo, Assistant Attorney General for the respondents, State Board of Mediation and Arbitration.
And you both would like to be heard, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll mark that ready. Thank you. All right. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements. Thank you.
Sure. As indicated, this entire proceeding is being recorded. There's no need to request a recording from us. It should be available on our website soon after the meeting. And if anyone has trouble accessing that, just let us know and we'll make sure you can get access to it. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that.
Thank you. So we'll call the first matter, it's docket number FIC 2022-0550, Ian Cook versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. Are you there, Mr. Cook?
I'm here.
Okay, 1 second. The State of Connecticut's here as well. Could you identify yourself, counsel?
Assistant Legal Director Colin Milne for the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection.
Thank you. So I hear most agree. Would you like to begin, counsel?
I'll be brief, and I would like to maybe reserve any time up front for any rebuttal in case Mr. Cook has any concerns about the extent of this agreement.
I just have one question. Mr. Cook, can you hear the attorney arguing?
It's kind of low, and there's...
Okay.
You're going to have to speak up, project.
I apologize. I'm going to be brief. If you have any additional information you'd like to be heard, the department really... we're not objecting to the orders at the end of the agreement. We believe the decision is ultimately a fair one, and we intend, not only do we intend, we shall fulfill the hearing officer's order. The only concern that I do want to raise to the commission is with the finding of paragraph 42, and I understand this might be a small kind of fry in this large opinion. This one paragraph. It is further found, however, that the respondents exercise control over the personnel files at issue for purposes of responding to the client's request. It is found that when DAS receives a request for records that are part of the personnel files of the respondent employees, DAS notifies respondents of such requests and provides these respondents with the records that are responsive to the request. It is further found that the respondents review such records and decide what information they need to redact. In the purposes of this decision, the department takes issue with this finding because we don't believe it's actually supported by the testimony below at the hearing. The individual who testified for DS was one of the HR business managers who multiple times throughout the hearing testified that she did not have the exact knowledge or the personal knowledge of the exact procedures that I think central office at DS follows when responding to a FOIA request. And I could be wrong, but my assumption is that this is what this finding is referring to. It is important to note that the department and any state and all state agencies do not have direct access to personnel files for their employees in the terms of we have them either stored physically on site. They are currently stored in on a cloud system, which is found in this agreement. In order to gain access to those files, we do need a link and access from DAS, from a different state agency. So I think this might be kind of slicing it thin here, but our concern is that for our purposes of processing it, we do not maintain direct control. And we just want to make sure that this decision at least understands that, because our concern is more for future decisions where we are at essentially the mercy of an entire different state agency that controls our access to state records. And we wouldn't want to essentially be found for any sort of violations in the future where there's a delay in getting that access, which did occur in this matter. We fully intend to, because of this matter and kind of what occurred in this matter, we are going to be absolutely kind of taking back our own files and reviewing them now. And so any other information, I can gladly answer the commission's concerns, but I also would like to retain any time for any rebuttals if necessary.
Just to be clear, so how would you amend 42?
And I've been struggling for a couple of weeks now to thinking how I would want to do that. I think for the purposes, I personally would actually, my thought would be actually strike 42 in its entirety, because I don't think it actually affects the entire decision. I think you can actually strike that without throwing everything out, because I think ultimately it was found that the executive order and the agreement was an improper delegation of the FOIA authority from our department. But I just have concerns with this paragraph, because I don't think it was accurate. So I would ask that it be struck.
Okay. Thank you. So Mr. Cook, are you there?
Yes.
Do you have a response?
I do. So respectfully, with regard to the argument from Attorney Milne, I would disagree that that portion, that paragraph, should be stricken. There was some discussion on the record from the respondent's direct witness, which is a legal affairs paralegal, regarding the process they went through in terms of personally reviewing and redacting the records. I would also refer the commission to paragraph 41 that indicates that the hearing officer did recognize and indicate that the respondent agency doesn't have direct access to the DAS database, and there's some formal process that needs to be gone through for that. I would further indicate my concern over removing any of this, because there was some discussion on the record regarding, for instance, requests for emails, and there's kind of this technical issue with, you know, whether the respondent agency in this case maintains their emails, whereas the DAS actually maintains the servers that the emails are retained on. So I would be concerned about being, I guess, perhaps overly favorable for the respondent in terms of that, because while they've generally been good about providing some records, you know, if they decide to arbitrarily exalt technicality, then they may say that, for instance, in the future, email requests have to go through PAS. So I would frankly object to the removal of that paragraph or any substantial modification of it. In general and in closing, I would like to commend Attorney Munn, Hearing Officer Munn, for his thoroughness and diligence in preparing the report, especially on such short notice given the truncated timetable we dealt with. And I would request that the commission adopt it in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the hearing officer here?
Good afternoon. Just for the record, Kevin Munn, I was the hearing officer in this matter.
Attorney Munn, can you address paragraph 42 in the request to remove it versus Mr. Cook's challenge to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So the witness that testified at the, it was reopened hearing, but it was at her title was the HR business partner. She's an employee of DAS, but need to bring this business partner for the respondents. She did testify, the respondents are correct, she did testify she wasn't familiar with all of the details of how the process works as far as what DAS legal and does in conjunction with the respondents' legal department. But my notes and my recollection of the testimony was she did provide just a general summary of that process, and her understanding was that when a request comes in, she comes in through an online portal. The HR business partner will first upload the records through the portal for DAS, Department of Administrative Services Legal Department, to initially have access, and that DAS Legal would then contact the respondents for the respondents to determine whether to claim any exemptions. So that was the evidence, the testimony that was presented. Again, she did acknowledge she didn't know all the details, but that high level summary of how the process works, I think, was sufficient for the purposes of this case to make the findings that were made in paragraph 42. Just with respect to the potentially striking the entire paragraph 42, I do think that at least the first sentence of that paragraph is an important part of the decision, the finding that the respondents exercise control over the personnel files in this case, because the way that the Superior Court has interpreted the statute in question, which is 1-210A, is that the phrase maintained or kept on file means within the possession, custody, or control of a public agency. So I think the finding that they controlled the records was crucial to the decision. So I don't think it would potentially be problematic to strike that paragraph.
Thank you.
Just one question.
Commissioner Fujitsu.
I mean, I find this paragraph very helpful because for me, I got a little bit of understanding of who the DAS role is and what the agencies that they service are. But I thought your wording was written quite precisely, and it says the exercise control for the purpose of, not exercise control, but for the purpose of. So I think it's elegantly written for the purpose that you just stated. I don't see it saying that they absolutely exercise control, but then explains that there is a DASS role in it. In fact, they're the ones that first decide what to provide. So if they fail to provide something, then the DAS made a mistake somewhere along that. So I find it very helpful, but I read it a little bit more narrowly. It says exercise control for the purpose of, not absolute control.
Right. I appreciate that. And that was the main point, was that for the purposes of determining what records the requester is going to get,
should get
the respondent's exercise control. And I think just thinking of it practically, one issue that kept coming to my mind was coming out the other way and saying that the respondents didn't exercise control and that therefore they didn't have to respond. It's hard to see, for example, in this case where there's a finding that some of the redactions were not appropriate, to say that that was DAS's, to find DAS in violation, even though the respondents are the ones that decided to redact that information, doesn't seem to make much sense. So you're right, I appreciate the focusing on that, that for the purposes of responding to FOI requests, the respondents exercise control.
And I just want to say, this is an unbelievable amount of precise work, and for both of you to have worked through it and gotten to a conclusion that you can both agree with, it's really terrific to see that. The amount of work and precision here is important for us as a lesson as to how to navigate sometimes complicated issues. So at least I would. But for me, this little paragraph helped explain the process a little bit. I'm trying to hear, Attorney, your concern, but I would read it more narrowly than maybe you read it about how much control you actually exercise. But I was reading. Different people can read it slightly differently. Thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions? Attorney Mill?
I think the biggest concern is, and again, is really the idea of direct control. And just that briefly, we differentiate this from a case of emails where DSB employees have control and access and can review their own emails, as opposed to this where no one has access except to the special server. I'm just thinking of the language. I just think the, I would at least ask that the second, I guess it would be the second sentence be struck, if not, and then maybe some, and I've been struggling with how to actually, because I do agree with Attorney Munn's, I think, point of view, if that's where the decision kind of rests on. And I'm not challenging the full basis here.
You want the language.
At least, because I do not think that
was... Read the language you think should be straight.
I think the final, for the... I would, I guess, I would want the second sentence of that paragraph struck.
Read it.
It is found that when DAS receives a request for records that are part of the personnel files of the respondent's employees, DAS notifies the respondent of such requests and provides the response with the records that are responsive to the request. And then the next sentence as well. It is yes only and only because the evidence that was actually presented at the hearing and that was actually found in is that that process did not occur at all. So I don't know. I don't think there's just enough testimony. I think the testimony was so general and almost speculative that a finding could not be reached on that issue.
So I just to make sure it's clear. This paragraph 42 was based on the HR business partner's testimony about her understanding of the general process that's followed. Again, so that's not to say that what occurred in this case is set forth in the first several paragraphs. So primarily on page 3, paragraphs 10 through 17. So that's the specific facts that happened here. Paragraph 42 was the HR business partner's testimony about her understanding of the general practice of DAS legal and responding to a request for personnel files. If her testimony, if she had a misunderstanding, I can only go by what the testimony had in front of me. Again, she did acknowledge that she didn't know all the specifics, but that was her understanding about the general practice. And so that's the testimony that the finding was based on.
Yeah, you're not stating that what happened, what you're suggesting in 42 happened here.
Right.
You're stating this is your understanding of the process based on the testimony.
Right, correct.
But I apologize.
Go ahead.
It is reading as a factual finding, and I don't think there was enough sufficient foundation for to reach that finding. Here. And I think what's somewhat unfair is that, you know, DAS legal or DAS, a representative from DAS might be able to more articulately argue what their process is from more of that high level kind of leadership. They're not a party to this case, so I feel it's somewhat, my concern is binding them to a process or a factual finding that may or may not be accurate. That's my major concern really as well as at this point.
Just on that point, this is not intended to say this is the process that they have to follow. This is just a summary of the testimony that was provided in this case and the basis of, you know, part of the basis of finding that the respondents were required to comply with the request. So if to the extent the testimony was there was a misunderstanding or the process has changed, I don't think there's anything suggesting that they have to follow this process. It's just that was the evidence that I had before me. That was the witness that was presented. And so that's the testimony I had to base the findings on.
No.
I think I've said, I'll leave it to the commission.
The estimate is determined and see if the hearing officer agrees. Could you insert words in there that indicate that about the general, it is the general practice based upon the testimony received. It's the general practice. Would that work?
I think that would be sufficient. That would make sense. And that would still address the issues that need to be addressed.
So you could say based upon the testimony of the HR business partner.
Right, exactly.
The general process. It is found that the general process, that may satisfy.
I believe so. I think it's more that there's somewhat, I think there needs to be a qualifier as somehow in that language.
Thank you, Attorney Murphy. I think that's a great suggestion.
That would be inserted at the beginning of the second sentence in paragraph 42. So it would say, based upon the testimony of the HR business partner, it is found that the general practice when DAS receives a request, let's see if this makes sense, receives a request for records that are part of the personnel files of the respondent's employees. It is the general, maybe it is the general practice. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It is the general practice.
I think I'm just writing down to make sure I understand where the amendment needs to be. But so what I have is that if the second sentence of paragraph 42 would be amended to say, it is found based on the testimony of the HR business partner that when DAS receives a request for records that are part of the personnel files of the respondent's employees, it is the general practice that DAS notifies the respondents of such requests and provides the respondents with the records that are responsive to the request.
That sounds good. Does anyone want to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Strader, I'll hold the items as described by the hearing officer.
Motion's been made and seconded. Motion to amend has been made and seconded. Does anyone have any discussion about that amendment?
Can I speak on that, Wayne?
You know, you didn't get an opportunity. Sure, Mr. Cook.
I have concerns about leaving out the last sentence, where the respondent agency, in fact, is the one that maintains discretion over whether or not to redact any information. I believe if any, I don't disagree with the modification of the testimony from the DAS business partner, but I still believe that the final sentence should be included.
The proposal was not to change that third sentence. The amendment was just referencing the second sentence.
Just the modification of the second sentence.
Okay. And I have no objection to it.
Okay. So motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call in favor of the amendment to paragraph 42 of this decision. Commissioner Farish.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci.
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee.
Yes.
Commissioner Ganschwin.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Paul and Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. Is there any further discussion in this decision as amended? I'll just make a comment. I think Mr. Fuzeci said it well. This was a well-drafted decision, highly technical, extremely detailed, and an awful lot of hard work went into it. And I commend the hearing officer very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great job. All right, anything further? Do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Strader, I move adoption of the amended hearing
report. Commissioner Hankins, second. Motion's been made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Greenstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Oney, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Mills. Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Mills.
Thank you.
Calling docket number FIC 2022-0551, Robert Cushman versus Christopher Shute, Chief Police Department, City of New Britain, head out.
Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. Mary Pokorski, Assistant Corporation Counsel, on behalf of the respondents.
Thank you. Is Robert Cushman there? Would you like to begin?
Thank you. Yes, I filed an objection to the proposed final decision, and just to summarize it, the city is objecting to the proposed findings contained in paragraphs 45 and 46. That find violation of the promptness provisions. on the grounds that we feel that finding is not consistent with the evidence that was presented or the findings of fact that are set forth in paragraphs 37 to 45. In consideration of all the factors that are considered when making a determination on promptness, there was a finding that the city had a backlog of requests for body worn camera videos. There was evidence presented that the city additionally had one member of the police department handling this request, and in response to the backlog, added a second member and then a third member. And based upon all of the evidence presented, we feel that there was not a violation of the promptness request, and we feel that the complaint should have been dismissed on those grounds. In addition, I just wanted to note one additional thing that was not cited in my objection. In the footnote 2, which is on page 3 of the decision, it talks about the date that the November 8th complaint request was received by the police department. And there was an affidavit by the chief secretary that indicated that she typically receives the mail. And she had been in the office through November 17th, and that the complainant's November 8th letter had not been received as of the 17th. Since then, out of the office sick, and when she returned to the office on November 28th, she had the complainant's letter on her desk. She immediately emailed it to the Office of Corporation Counsel, and within 2 days of that, the complainant's request was acknowledged, and we informed him we would get him the records as soon as possible. So I just want to make a note of the fact that based upon the affidavit that was presented, as of November 17th, that November 8th letter had not been received by the police department. And in that footnote, it states that additionally, in the absence of evidence to the contrary, it is presumed that the complainant's request was delivered within a reasonable amount of time after November 8th, and therefore it is concluded that there was a constructive denial of the complainant's request prior to November 28th, the date he filed the complaint, and we just feel that there was evidence to the contrary, and the fact that as of November 17th, his letter had not been received.
Thank you. Is the hearing officer?
Hi, good afternoon. Mary Kate Smith, I was the hearing officer in this matter. If you'd like, I can address both points that were raised.
Yes, please.
Because the footnote 2 is on top of mine, and if you don't mind, I can start with that. The affidavit that was submitted indicated that the mail is first delivered to the front clerk, the front desk clerk, and there was no evidence as to when the front desk clerk received the request. So it's true, and in the affidavit also states that the assistant to the chief receives the mail for the chief, and that she was November 17th, she hadn't received a request, but there was no evidence of when the front desk clerk had received it. And actually, I think there's a statement in the affidavit that she does not know exactly when it was received. However, she believed it was sometime between November 17th and November 28th, I believe. I think this is an issue in other cases too, where the mail gets delivered to the front desk and it's not recorded as to when that is. So that's where the presumption comes in under the new appellate court authority. So that's my explanation or response to that. With respect to the promptness issue, I agree that this case was fairly close on the promptness. But after hearing all of the evidence and considering it, I determined that on balance, the respondents didn't provide sufficient evidence to justify the 9-month delay in providing the records. There were several factors that weighed in favor of the respondents. However, not all of the factors are weighed equally. And there was no specific evidence on how long it took them to actually review and redact the video. So in this case, it dealt with body-worn cameras and dash cam videos, and there were 39 of them. I mean, there were a fair amount of them. It was a significant situation that occurred in New Britain. I understand all of that, but how long it actually took to review and redact the videos is a key fundamental fact, I think. And when you're looking at 9 months delay, so we didn't have evidence on, they were first, so if we back up, the request comes in November. They at least acknowledged it November 30th. The first disclosure goes out to the complainant in January of 2023. And that was primarily paper records, and there might have been some recordings. Like, I'm not sure. I think it's mostly paper records. And then the next disclosure, and in that disclosure, there's in the letter accompanying that disclosure, it states we need some body-worn camera video footage and dash cam video footage, but it's going to take a few months. So then the next disclosure is in April 2023. Approximately 4 months later, and they did disclose I want to say 23 videos.
It was 23.
Thank you. 23 videos. And that there were 16 more. They needed more time. But then it didn't, those weren't disclosed until August, another 4 months, which it may be okay, but in this situation, when I asked the witness how long, do you know how long it took you to review and redact those videos? He said, I couldn't tell you. And while there was some testimony that the 16 videos were about 45 minutes to an hour long, there was also some testimony, which is raised in the brief, that they have to review the videos in their entirety. However, there was no evidence that they had to review them in real time. I mean, you could speed up the videos. I don't know how many redactions there were. So I really don't, and even if it were 12 to 16 hours, I think 4 months. And with respect to the other factors, it was generalized testimony. So that's how I came out on it. I think it's a key factor, and it weighs heavily, at least for me. I listened to the witnesses and reviewed the. I think the respondents were making efforts and produced many records, and I commend them on that, but I still think there wasn't sufficient evidence to justify the 9 months.
Thank you. So there was in paragraph 42 specifically found that at the time that the respondent's request was received, there was a backlog of 46 requests. For body-worn cameras or dash camera request. There was testimony specifically that the body-worn cameras have to be watched in their entirety because we need to determine if there's anything that we have to redact. So they have to be watched in their entirety. There, again, with respect to the 16 videos, there was testimony from the detective that they were 45 minutes to an hour long. So you're talking about he has to watch 45 minutes or an hour each video. He has to, he did not know how many redactions he had to make, but you're talking about at least, you know, short of 16 hours when you're talking about each of the videos being 1 hour long in light of their other work, in light of the backlog that they have. And this was a third detective that the city added to address the backlog. So the city was taking, you know, all steps necessary to try and deal with the request. And the complainant's request was not an ordinary request. There were five individuals arrested. He wanted the body-worn cameras depicting the arrest of each of the individuals. Again, there were 23 that were disclosed in April, and then another 16 in August. And so how do we determine how quickly that should have been disclosed? She's saying it took four additional months, but that was in light of all the other work that they have. There was testimony as to what the records department does do. They work as the court liaison. They have to handle subpoenas. And so each of the detectives testified that they took all steps necessary to respond to his request as soon as they could. And so in my opinion, based upon the findings, and specifically in paragraph 45, it states, it is found that the respondent defendants are hampered by a heavy workload, that the complainant did not express a need to receive the requested records expeditiously, that he had received at least some of the records from the Office of the State's Attorney. Nevertheless, it's found that almost 9 months from the respondent's acknowledged receipt of the request was not prompt, and we disagree with that. And also, with just with respect back to the receipt, again, the testimony was, yes, it is, the mail is received by the front officer, but that the officer puts it in all the mailboxes, and the chief secretary testified that she looks at the box every single day to check the mail. As of November 17th, when she left, that note, that letter had not been received. And again, there's a presumption that it was received within a reasonable time of November 8th, when as of November 17th, it had not been received. And as soon as it was received, it was sent to my office, and we acknowledged it within 2 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney Smith.
Yes, thank you. There was evidence that they had other duties and that there was they had a lot of work owed, but there was no specific evidence as to when they were redacting this and when, how long it took and what was interfering with it. Also, with regard to the backlog, yes, there were 46 requests for body-worn camera videos. Some of them may have taken a long time. Some of them may not have. There was no specific evidence as to, like, how big of requests they were. I'm not sure that this is not an ordinary request. Attorney Cushman makes these requests often. It's the same request he makes to all most police departments. There happened to be several defendants, it's true, and I recognize the fact that there were 39 videos at issue. The other missing piece is that with respect to the other videos that, you know, beyond the 16, we don't know how long those were and how long those were to review. So I think it's a key fact to know how long it takes to review. I mean, even like a general, there wasn't, I mean, and so if you're even going on the 12 to 16 hours, I think it wasn't prompt.
We did hire additional staff or ask additional staff to help review videos.
Right. One of the staff members was hired prior to this request, and then they hired a second individual, I believe it was in March of 2023. So even then, that was several months after this request had come in.
I mean, doesn't that give you enough information to show that they're trying to deal with a backlog? They hire one and then another. So then now they have three people where they normally have one.
I agree that you were trying to address their backlog, yes. But I don't know in this case, based on the evidence, that these videos, couldn't have been. So the question is,
were they reviewing?
Was there an undue delay in this case? Right. And I'm saying, well, I don't know because there wasn't specific. I asked how long did it take? There wasn't specific evidence on these specific records.
Right. But they did have evidence that they tried to address a backlog and that they had 46 requests and they couldn't get it all done. I know they didn't answer your specific question, but they generated information that showed that they were trying to address a backlog.
Yes.
So there was a delay.
Yeah. Well, they've been starting to already address this particular request at least by January. The new person was hired in March. They were trying to, but their next disclosure was April, and then it took all the way to August to get everything to the. So they had a backlog. I don't know how big it was, like how long it all took. Mm-hmm. They did hire additional staff. I commend them on that. But I mean, I think this is a key fact that's missing. That
how long it took.
It didn't justify how long it took
to review each tape and then the information. But you said a promptness issue was a tough issue for you.
I think it was a fairly close case, but in reviewing all the evidence on balance, I think, you know, there wasn't sufficient evidence to justify the 9-month delay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner Hankins. Yeah, I mean, I keyed in on what you said, Attorney Smith, that it was fairly close on the issue of promptness. And I found the respondent's brief quite compelling. I mean, it wasn't some free-floating, whiny bunch of uncollected thoughts. You know, it was, you know, tied into the testimony and tied into the exhibits, tied into the testimony. And I remember I had done a case as a hearing officer with the expert assistance of Attorney Perlman, and there were only, I believe, 9 tapes or 9 hours. It was only nine of them, and I reviewed them, and she reviewed them several times. And to me, it was, like swimming through peanut butter. It was difficult to watch, not difficult in and of itself, but it was like kind of mind-numbing to watch them. And this was exploded into a number of them. And I mean, New Britain is not a frequent flyer. You know, I can't remember last time they were here, and I don't know when they were here on promptness. You know, my memory might not be that good, but they are. This whole aspect of promptness and the weighing of promptness, I think, kind of sparks them into, you know, they're not going to be doing this again, I don't think. You know, they're not going to be coming close to it. And it is, can't tell you how hard it is to go against what you've said, particularly since it's so well written and so careful a sifting of the evidence. And I think because it's written and they're not a frequent flyer, that I would have to decide in their favor by the thinnest. And it's closer, me too, you know, because I have the utmost respect for you as a hearing officer. But I think it's because I haven't seen them here on this issue before, and I don't think it's come up. And I think that the respondent's brief is persuasive. There's no brief in opposition to it. To see what, you know, so it's sort of like the sound of one hand clapping. But I you know, I guess I'm reluctantly going with them. But I would have to, I would have to vote in favor of not finding a violation of the promise and disclosure requirements, but by the thinnest. And next time I will remember this case, and next time I'll be watching it again.
Mr. Streeter. It's not raised or thin for me. I'm full on the promptness here. I appreciate your efforts as a hearing officer, but I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of how videos are reviewed and redacted. I'm a town administrator. Part of my job as a records control officer is to do this. And it could take, you know, 6 or 7 hours per hour. You cannot fast forward through to do a review. And being from in a small town, I obviously New Britain's not, but just thinking about how the hiring process is, you know, budgetarily, application, the hiring process, it doesn't happen overnight. We have DAS here. We know it takes months when we try and get somebody for the commission to be hired. So the fact that they hired somebody not just once, but twice within that span of time, I think there was efforts that, you know, mitigate the reason for the delay. So I, like Commissioner Hankins, think that, you know, I would have an issue with the promptness, but it's not as razor thin. Thank you.
Commissioner Goldsby.
So when I first looked at this and then now hearing the testimony or the your comments and as well as counsel's argument, I agree, having not done it in this capacity, videos and anything editing format just take a really long time. But certainly when you see the evidence that you put here and the findings of the report, I was surprised by the promptness when I read it. So I think that's also one of the reasons why I'm going to agree. However, I do wonder just more so going forward in these cases, because the respondents, they're doing whatever they can to, you know, provide the information in the records. Obviously, everyone isn't obviously all always on the same page and as prompt. I don't know New Britain as much, but I wonder if, is it their duty and requirement to know exactly how long and how much hours it's taking to do the task? I do agree that there should be some level of tracking of what it is that you're doing, because you need to know the resources and that sort of thing. But I would say the simple fact that they hired an additional officer and because of the backlog to address it says that they were trying to be as prompt because it's about undue delay. Obviously, we don't know everything they're doing every single hour of the day, but I do think under the circumstances of the type of job that they have, that it seems reasonable to me. So that's my take on it.
Any other commissioners?
I'm going to vote with the hearing officer on this case. I believe the way to get rid of backlog and being backed up in backlog is by getting rid of the backlog. So I also believe that we have to look at what happened in this case and whether this was prompt or not prompt. New Britain may have taken action that will improve performance in the future. But the only way to get out of backlog is getting out of backlog. And second, I believe these videos are very, very important generally as a service to the public. And in this state, we should be more prompt, generally speaking. So I'm driven by the promptness aspect. I understand that you've tried to catch up, and that's terrific. But in this case, it took 9 months. So I'm gonna... those are the driving things in my mind, that we cannot ease up on sending the message. Promptness, and there are going to be more and more video requests, and generally police departments have to comply with the law and build staffs to reply promptly to those requests. And if we have more and more of them, as I suspect we will, without taking judgment on whether a good one, unfortunately the law is that the police departments need to comply. And here it took 9 months. But I'm really happy you staffed up, and hopefully that will help in the future. But I'd like to send the message, and these facts are clear enough for me. This is really key in supplying these videos to the public.
Yes.
So just question for the hearing officer. So even just looking at paragraph 37, and I don't necessarily disagree with what the commissioners have been saying, but you'll see in that bottom line, so the advisory opinion that's addressing promptness, right, quickly and without undue delay, taking into account all of the factors presented by a particular request. You noted, I don't remember what paragraph it was, that the complainant wasn't seeking urgency of what they wanted. I'm not saying that they obviously wanted it, but that wasn't an issue. And then there is something that mentions the time and personnel required to comply with the request. So while you did not have evidence to, indicate how much time it took them, we know it took some significant time because we know the length of the videos. So I think taking that into consideration and then knowing that they hired an additional person, I still stand with what I was saying. I guess my question for you is there something else that could have been presented beyond what you've already mentioned? It sounds like the issue really is you didn't know how long it specifically took for them to review the videos. Is that correct?
Well, we don't know how long all of the videos were. There was testimony that 16 of the videos took 45 minutes to an hour. Also, the witness, and with all due respect to the witness, and I assume it's because he has a lot of duties, but he didn't know a lot about the actual videos that were at issue in this case. And so, I mean, yeah, he said they were about 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, and weighing the responses to the other questions, I don't know for sure that it was, and I know we don't have to find 100%, but I still question that. So, but putting that aside, I still think if it was at a minimum 12 to 14 hours, I don't think it would be prompt. But also with respect to the other 23 videos, we don't know how long those took. And also the testimony regarding their other job duties, was very general, and I get it, they're busy, but typically you'll have someone say, well, during that period of time, all of this stuff was going on. I mean, it could be general too, but specific to the time period. So I know kind of, okay, what was going on? How long was it? This took me, and it doesn't have to be, I think you were asking, what's their burden? It doesn't have to be,
yes.
Yeah, a time record, you know, but some evidence. He said, I couldn't tell you. So when you're looking at 9 months, I I didn't think I had sufficient evidence to say they were prompt. Without knowing, how long it took, how long it took to review the other records. We don't even know how long the videos, how long those videos were. But if you even look at, the request came in November, the first disclosure is not even with body-worn cameras, it came in January. And that kind of fact, I mean, so, but yeah, my main, it's one of the larger factors I think we need to know some evidence about how long it took them to review.
Thank you. Anything further from any of the commissioners? Is there a motion? You have a decision. Is there an amendment, Mr. Higgins?
No.
You wish to propose?
Well, no. I mean, if I were going to propose anything, I would just say that just to redact paragraph 3 of the conclusion under other recommendations. I don't know if that's procedurally correct at this point, or if we vote the whole thing up or down. Or...
Well, an option would be to amend regarding promptness, and let's, to reorient ourselves, although counsel, she only challenged the promptness, there's a whole other issue and violation for failing to disclose records that preceded that analysis, so there's a whole other part to the decision that you want to take into account here. But you could move to amend on the promptness. We'd have to find some language. I would think that would be involved in amending paragraph 45 and then amending a piece of paragraph 3 of the order. But I'm not sure beyond that if more would be needed to be done. We might need to take a look at that. So you could make a motion to amend along those lines, see what happens. Or somebody could just move the report as is, again, in total, with all of the issues on the table, and see.
Okay, I'll roll the dice, Commissioner Hankins. With surgical-like precision, I would make a motion to amend paragraph 3 of the recommendation, and then as to paragraph 45, to amend paragraph 45 of the proposed decision to be in conformity with the excision of number 3 and 46. Thank you. Yeah, 46 could be excised also.
May I make a suggestion that we just take a moment's break and allow us to look at it to make sure that we get a nice amendment for you to offer?
Sure, that was not exactly the model of clarity. I'll know that.
Why don't we take a 5-minute recess? Okay. Is that 5 minutes enough?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll just
thank
take
you.
A look, and then I can recommend something to you.
I think it's